XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Tuesday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online, and at our website, stevebick.com. It is opening day in two places. We obviously, Horseshoe Indianapolis gets underway. We'll talk to Rachel McLaughlin. And Racing Rachel will join us, yeah. And we'll look at what is a very good opening day card. I looked at it. I haven't typed it up yet, but I don't see why this is not worth taking a shot. Yeah, starts at 2:30 Eastern, first post. And, of course, 9 Thoroughbred, 1 quarter horse that ends the card. But of course the multis, including the their late pick five, the new introduced early pick five with the elimination of the jackpot bet. And by the way, last week's visit with Eric Alstrom really resonated. I think I probably a day later or a couple days later made note, but if I didn't, what a gratifying response. Eric said he heard from just a flood of people, and ideally it resonates on a wider basis. It'd be nice to whittle these down and kind of eradicate something of a scourge on horseplay. Looking forward to catching up with Rachel. Saw her in Vegas, of course, which, gosh, now feels, actually, it's really not that long ago, right? I mean, it was mid-March. It's only a month ago. It feels a lot longer than that for whatever reason. It was St. Patrick's Day weekend. Yeah, it's 4 weeks ago, four plus. It feels like a completely distant memory. But we'll catch up and get going. And over the course of the season, as it gets going, we'll check in with everybody on the roster that brings you the action from Horseshoe Indianapolis, 2:30 today. But I said two venues, right? I hope some people are aware that in Collinsville, FanDuel Racing, Fairmont Park, gets their season going later today as well. 1 o'clock post at FanDuel, and Jim Watkins will visit. Get Jim in here and just get a little bit of a table setting for the season ahead. And, you know, when Hawthorne opened, made note of the way in which Hawthorne had staggered their schedule in anticipation of the start of the downstate racing. And, you know, the former Fairmont Park is getting an overhaul, and you're going to have a new Hawthorne. And so for now, I mean, this is Illinois Racing, and you know, Hawthorne certainly has done what they can do to garner your support, including the reduced takeout on the whips. So the full complement upstate downstate action in Illinois. So we'll get a opening day salvos from... It does take some doing to force in, you know, say, FanDuel. FanDuel Racing and Casino, right? Is it gaming? I think it's racing and casino. The Horseshoe, Indianapolis, of course, you know, recently rebranded too. That's right. So opening day in two of the Midwest venues, and of course, more to come because Canterbury not far off and Prairie Meadows. So the, you know, the summer schedule, the spring into summer schedule starting to take root, and your daily wagering menus are going to, you know, start to morph the way they do. So that's part of our agenda today. Two of the guests from yesterday that had to be tabled to today. We'll talk to Arno Delacour, talk about his emergent and impressive Grade One winner, Shea Pierre, Maker's Mark. So we'll get Arno in here and see how his spring is going to shape up. Nick Tamaro is going to join us early. I promised, as mentioned, I think must have been on Friday when he got waylaid, and he said we'd probably get a couple of Nick visits in, and we'll do a bit of a hybrid. Actually, Nick wasn't tabled from yesterday, but John White was. So John White today, and did they? Let me see. Actually, how far out are they? Because of course we got the Santa Anita, you know, next season essentially getting going, and they have not drawn yet. All right, so I guess they'll probably draw today for Friday and tomorrow for Saturday. And I think there's, what did I see? There's, I actually did look ahead out of curiosity. The Kona Gold and the California this weekend, on Saturday anyway. So racing will resume on the West Coast. The West Coast conversation, of course, that was involved yesterday, the Dan Ross article and the visit we had with Joe Applebaum. And I'm actually waiting for a few people who, you know, heard about it and hadn't had a chance to listen yet. And so I don't want to do too much, you know, rehashing. Until there's a chance to actually rehash with some people who I asked for some feedback. And I think later this morning, actually, Papo's going to join us from Amwager. And on the he'll put on his Amwager hat. And his, you know, he's always got the Form to Win hat on. But on the Amwager side, and we're going to survey the platforms. Because while I appreciated what Joe said yesterday about innovation and modernizing tools and investing in, you know, technology, in fact, there was a term that what did he say? There was one term in there that I made a mental note. I should have made a written note. There's already some tools available, including, you know, the odds projections. But it would go a real long way to, I think, assuage concerns and frustrations of players. If, you know, if the on-air personalities, if they, you know, had a graphics package that came up
a couple of times through the odd cycle, you know, through the lead up to, you know, the horses getting behind the gate, you know, maybe halfway, maybe at 10 minutes and you know, 2 minutes, you know, pop up, you know, current morning line, current odds, anticipated final odds. I mean, even if it's off by a couple of points, giving people a better feel for what they can expect by the time the bell rings and what those final odds are going to be, you will really, I mean, first of all, it sends a positive message. It sends a message that we're listening and we appreciate your business and we're going to, you know, do something to answer your, you know, questions and, you know, help you, you know, feel better about being a customer, right? I mean, some of this stuff is answerable or, you know, addressable just by, you know, quality customer service approach, right? Am is this some revelation? I know that there's a tendency to say, oh, you know, it's noise on the internet. No, it's not noise on the internet. It's legitimate customer satisfaction distress. I mean, so, you know, some things cannot be instantly cured. Notably, you know, steward ruling issues. I mean, this, you know, you can do the best you can in terms of putting the best people you can. That would go a long way. But you can't. You know, there's going to be people that are unhappy with steward calls one way or the other, and there's going to be people that are, you know, some are going to benefit, some are going to be unhappy. So some of that kind of thing, you know, some of the there's things that happen. We're dealing with animals, and you know, there's late scratches, there's, you know, but the things that are within control, I mean, that part of it, gosh, I mean, I was surprised by a few, I was surprised by some of Joe's, the approach or posture that Joe took on some issues. But I can tell you that I know that Joe, you know, Joe is working, he actually is working on things that will benefit players. Something kind of cool that I know that he's been working on a while. And it feels like it's maybe something that's going to arrive sooner than later. But we will keep this ball in the air, and we will keep discussing this. And I also got to reach out, and I got two players in mind, you know, people that have been serious horse players for a number of years who are betting less, and they're going to tell you why. And, you know, I know that there's, you know, track operator individuals that listen, and, you know, it may be perspective that they haven't heard. So we're going to do that as well. And I expect Paul Matisse to join us at a very, you know, well, we're obviously for Derby, but I want some of Paul's feedback on, you know, this dialogue. Let me get Nick in here now. Perfect timing. We said now. And Nick Tapperos is joining. Nick is
Nick is the greatest. He's making me laugh because I wrote him a certain comment, and when I went to call now, his response to my comment made me laugh. Nick.
Steve, good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, we'll laugh at our inside joke, but it's a fun day and a good Tuesday to you.
And to you, and we got a bunch of things to do. The first order of business, and I know you didn't get a chance. You're one of the people that I asked, you know, what you thought of what went on with Joe Applebaum yesterday. So I'll reserve that for after.
Well, I was about 5 minutes into it, and my daughter woke up. So
oh, boy.
I don't want to lay any blame at her feet because she wouldn't like it. But you know, that's unfortunately that's reality.
Well, was it my voice or was it Joe's that was like a high-pitched whistle that woke her up?
It was all that that talk about the Mendelsohn working fast. I think she got excited and wanted to get a bit in.
So it was the off the hook. So there you go. She's getting excited.
No doubt about it.
About Joe's consignment. So another plug for off the hook's consignment at OBS. we'll come back to you with your thoughts on this topic. This, you know, we had Beyer and Maury Wolf and Pat Cummings, and I'm going to keep this. We're going to keep this up. I mean, there's so many working parts to it.
Yeah, I mean, look, I based on what I heard from Joe, a little bit of what Travis said last week too. Mm. You know, I think there's a real part of the conversation here that needs to be about modernizing tow technology and the ability of the, you know, the rank and file customer to have some of the advantages that these guys do. It's the mistake that would be made is to paint the picture of CRW equals bad. It is just, yes, are there bad things that happen to the average player over time? There are, but there are also adjustments that can be made that can mitigate that a little bit. And Dan Ross really peeled back multiple layers of the onion on the California story in bringing up some of what he did, which is that, you know, they pay a premium to bet within the final minute.
Yep.
And there's been some adjustments made to some of the rebate schedules. That's another thing. Why does everybody's rebate schedule exist in Never Never Land? Right? Why is there no standardization of what is going on rebate wise? Five different guys could be sitting playing on their ADW together, guys and gals for that matter, and one could be getting nothing, one could be getting a blend of 10, one could be getting a blend of 5, and sometimes it's arbitrary. Right? Sometimes it doesn't even depend on play. So these are the kind of things that have happened and that have been perpetuated and have gotten significantly worse. And yeah, I mean, it's good that we're talking about CRWs, but what frustrates me is that we see some of the things that have gone on and we see comments made like they should be excluded. They're not getting excluded. That's not going to happen. It's simply the game cannot afford it at this point. There's no way it can happen. And so that's foolish. We can have a real conversation about them and the things that have gone on and what we can do to make it better. And I think that's a key part of it. But, you know, one of the major ones for me, two of the major ones are upgrading tow technology and, you know, standardizing a little bit of what can go on in terms of rebates.
Well, and I'd love that, and all the tangents that are involved here, and one of them that Joe really fleshed out yesterday was the tools, and you know he basically was trying to reframe the entire discussion away from, you know, the CAWs, because I think he feels that there's no putting the genie back in the bottle, and you know, by saying, we should be asking what tools do the rank and file pen and paper handicapper, what can we put in their hands to put them on equal footing? And of course, that's a little silly because they're not, you know, no matter what we get, it's not going to be equal footing per se. It may narrow the gap a tiny bit, but, unless a bunch of rank and file players create, you know, their own agglomeration, and maybe there is a future in that. You know, Twin Spires has played with this, with the bet, you know, the batch betting, the team betting, right? Of buying into tickets. You know, that's sort of a rudimentary approach to this.
Yeah, I mean, and I would ask you, Steve, quite honestly, if we talk about adding new people to the game and getting into to some of the younger markets, is somebody in their mid-20s likely to just decide, yeah, you know what, I'll grab up whatever information I can, and I'll decide to just become a recreational horse player that maybe gets more serious about it? Or are they likely to try and go that route of scraping data and putting together some type of algorithm and building something along those lines that generation is much more well known for? So, I mean, giving them the option of even being able to do that is pivotal. In my opinion, that's a way. No, I'm not advocating for the creation of more CRWs. And I think the term CRW is a little bit misapplied as well, because you have some of the customers that go through Elite Turf Club that are playing at a level that a lot of people that have created batch betting systems can't. And so that's another thing, right? You have them. But at the same time, I mean, these groups have spent thousands and thousands of hours building something, and they have teams and teams of people that they employ to help them execute all of that. And so to just say that they've done something wrong, or they're doing something that's improper or illegal or anything like that, I don't think that's a fair characterization. But I do think that an adjustment has to be made so that we can level out the playing field, because obviously they're crushing the average player in terms of effective takeout.
Exactly. And, that's that term, in fact, that Andy Serling coined, years ago, as the discussion of this started to, really get into the mainstream. So,
how long, Steve, before a Tuesday afternoon at Thistledown is basically just, Elite 17 versus Elite 2 versus everybody else?
Well, that's funny you say that, because I think back to a conversation at Santa Anita where Tim Ritvo was sitting with me. And I brought this up to Tim, and specifically because, I mean, in a lot of ways, I mean, Tim, he opened Pandora's box to a large
degree. Let the lion in the gate, all right.
So he said, there'll be a point when they're playing against each other, and we're trying to increase the liquidity, and there's plenty of positive about the liquidity conversation, but. I mean, when he said that, I was dumbstruck. I was like, you got to be kidding with this. I mean, that you're going to basically, you're going to basically have this will be like Byzantine warfare with armies being led by elephants, charging each other, and maybe a couple of guys don't get stomped to death.
Yeah, and the problem is that shows a bit of a misunderstanding of how they operate, because at that point the edge is gone and the pools are too sharp, and so they're not going to bet. They're actually going to bet less if they get into that. They need that sort of cushion that they can get in order to bet and get things back to where they want it based on how things look, through the system. So yeah, we can't, then you want to talk about liquidity. Well, that's going to destroy the liquidity. So it's a multifaceted conversation. And quite honestly, look, you deserve a lot of credit for bringing it up, because a lot of people out there are going to be very educated by it. And at least we'll peel the curtain back on some of what has gone on, and we'll get people to understand that. I mean, obviously being at Keeneland over the weekend, and hearing about the myriad statements made about the Maker's Mark Mile and all the things that could have gone on, people will begin to understand a little bit of how you integrate this into your own handicapping and betting, and understand a little bit about it with imputed odds and trying to understand. I'm not going to go so far as to say use the morning line as a guide. I'm not that ambitious. But, there are things, there are tools that you can use to get yourself familiarized with where odds might fall down to. Because CRW or not, 80% of play comes in the final minute anyway.
Right.
So, I mean, that's when the biggest adjustments are made no matter what. It just so happens that that's when the CRWs are really digging in. And so the adjustments can be, a little bit more significant.
Well, let's use the Keeneland activity as the backdrop. And I was traveling on Friday. We were coming back from New Orleans, Tina and I. And so I didn't see I didn't get to see the race live. So I was not on top of the minute-to-minute movement. However, the previous week, you and I tracked and were discussing right after it the Commonwealth. and what transpired with Hear My Song. And people, I mean, this is how short the memories are. People were complaining the same way about Hear My Song, and yet that number couldn't have been more in line with everything that you could use as your guide. And that also included a fabulous morning line from you that was literally, you know, other than the first two choices being flip-flopped, kind of surprisingly, Run Classic and who was the other one?
Nakatomi.
Other than those two flip-flopping, your line was perfect. And the Hear My Song went off, you know, right where he should have. And yet people were like, oh, my God, he was 23-1. It's like, yeah, but anybody that was paying attention knew that he was going to get cut in half.
Yeah, and that was a good example. Shea Pierre is an even better example, but you're right. I mean, they both showed the significant movement that can take place in the final minute. I mean, Shea Pierre, if you were looking at imputed odds, if you were looking at anything based on the multi-race bets, was going to come into 10. And it could have even been lower than that, and it ended up being 9. So there was no surprise whatsoever about that. The other thing that you were dealing with in the Maker's Mark Mile that didn't exist in the Commonwealth, obviously, is that you had an enormous favorite that the public had basically already gotten down on. You know, one thing I noticed, you know where there weren't any late odds drops, Steve? At Sam Houston over the winter. Because the public bets early. They don't get as involved right up to the bell. The simulcasters do, you know, especially. So the money that was going to be bet on Modern Games was bet by the 5 minute mark. And so at that point, you know, what was left was everybody that was going to come in late on pretty much everyone else, in my opinion. And that ended up being a variety of horses, including Shea Pierre. So yeah, the problem is that, and you and I both know this, obviously, we can explain it away accurately, but we're never going to change the optics. And the optics are, they're bad. They don't look good. And it doesn't, you know, when you're Keeneland and you've always tried to do everything in a very transparent, you know, very upward type of way, it doesn't look good when you have a grade one stake race where you have a horse whose price basically, you know, was cut by two thirds. Because, you know, that's probably not how you want things to go. So I'm sure, knowing who's involved in wagering, being Jim Goodman and Gatewood is in charge of everything at Keeneland, this is something that they're going to work on, making sure that they at least have the ability to acknowledge and work around a little bit, because it's just, you know, that's something I think you want to try and avoid as much as possible. On the flip side, the players have to be hip to it. They have to understand that, no, every time a late odds drop happened, it's not some example of past posting. I mean, I've seen this a million times, and there's no evidence. And look, I'm not an advocate for tote technology right now at all, but there's no evidence of past posting going on. So you have to stay away from assuming that everything has some nefarious element to it. And we see this now day in and day out, and yeah, it gets a little frustrating.
Before we touch on some performances and look ahead to the week, I had a conversation with Jim Goodman, in fact, minutes before the Bluegrass, in the paddock, after everybody had left. And, you know, Jim said, was basically saying out loud, you know, do you think that we can educate the public that is, you know, essentially confounded by this? And my answer is yes. I mean, it's not, we teach the public, you know, the horse playing public all kinds of things. The imputed odds opportunity is just, you know, putting up flashes and having pundits and talent, on-air talent, say, you know, let's take a look at the anticipated final odds. And here, what is that? AFC. Let's look at the anticipate, or AFO. Let's look at the AFO.
Yeah, DRF has it integrated into Formulator, and they list it as projected. You know, and so I'm afraid that we're going to have to fire up the bat signal and have Indiana's finest Eric Hallstrom do it, because I just don't know who else to count on out there. And you know, look, if I ever had the ability to make that decision for a racetrack. And I know Jim would be willing to do it too. Obviously, probably something they're looking at in the fall. But, you know, Indiana Grand's been a great test market for a lot of things that have gone on wagering wise that, you know, that I'm sure Eric would be willing to try if it could be designed properly. And I think the public would be educated on it very, very quickly. I don't think it's something that would. Now, are there going to be situations where the projection ends up being a little bit inaccurate too?
Well, sure.
Unfortunately, there are.
Yeah,
right. I mean, it's going to happen. It happened. You know, one of the examples that I just brought up was Hear My Song, where his projection was higher than he ended up going off. But what the way you're arming the public with the things that, with as many tools as possible, far outweighs any of those inaccuracies that could take place. So it's an exercise that you have to try, and I think once you try, it's going to end up helping. It's going to end up helping significantly.
There you go. All right, let's talk about some of what we saw this weekend. And I sort of floated a little bit of a query yesterday. Handicapping and playing Keeneland is a unusual experience because it feels, Nick, like there's this back of mind attitude when you approach it that says reach for prices. It's inscrutable racing, and it actually isn't. And it almost felt after the second weekend, I said to myself, why am I trying to beat favorites? I mean, there are going to be some big prices here and there, but it feels like, you know, 9-2 to 6-1 is about the most exotic long shot that you're getting out there.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think there are going to be opportunities where, you know, there's going to be a bigger price than that. But, you know, I think what you want to stay away from is the assumption that big field equals big price. You know, there was a day, I think last Wednesday, there were multiple big fields at the back half of the card. And I mean, I made more sub 2-1 favorites on the morning line than just about any day of the meet. So it's one of the things that players are really going to have to adjust for. And this kind of brings our conversation in a way a little bit full circle, is that the racing on a daily basis is not as competitive as it was years ago. That's simply because we're dealing with fewer horses, we're dealing with more conditions, we're dealing with them being spread out over a number of different racetracks where, you know, there's a little bit of form differences. And so you want to familiarize yourself as much as possible with everything that's going on, whether it's, you know, the races themselves, where they took place, and who ran in them. That's why you want to be using Formulator. You want to be doing stuff like that. Take advantage of all the data that's out there. You know, put everything in. But yeah, assuming that a race is going to yield a big price, or a card is going to yield a number of big prices, I think that's foolish. I don't think that really makes a ton of sense. But, you know, there have been now a couple of weekends in a row where there was a number of stakes races on a given card, and you basically had mostly chalk, right? The last two Saturdays, that's exactly how it ended up. Hear My Song was the only horse that ended up going off a relatively decent price. And otherwise, I mean, last Saturday's stakes were basically chalk, chalk, chalk. So, you know, you want to be, it's one of those meets that's short, but you want to be patient. You know, Saratoga is long enough for you to run out of money pretty early, and there's still a lot of meat left. Keeneland's not quite so long, but yeah, I mean, you want to recalibrate your thinking on a daily basis.
Well, and I'm just looking. I mean, here's the best double digit prices of the meet. There was McPeak in the Ashland at 20-1, you know, upsetting Punch Bowl, and you had to Hear My Song just under 12-1. You actually had that Mischievous Rogue earlier on the card Saturday too at 11-1, and then the 50-1 shot, Praise and Honor, on Friday.
Oh, that was that one was rough.
That beat Chitara.
I was on Chitara.
Yeah. There was a 15-1. He's an Angel, a maiden 30. That came on Friday as well. There was a 19-1 Vivar. That was in the early action on Saturday. And there was the 33-1 Boudoir Burlesque in the nightcap. Another 30 claimer. that produced a price. But otherwise, it's just been 5-2, 5-2, 2-1, 7-2, and the you know the best prices have been 6-1, 6-1, 9-2, an 8-1. I mean, that's been sort of the sweet spot that's been approachable.
Yeah, and you know, we talked a little bit about this with regards to the NHC. I spoke to, you know, that 6-1 is the new 12-1 in the daily game. There's just not as many opportunities for these big, big priced horses to win. So, you know, I think you want to, depending on how your individual play goes, you know, you want to stick the races that can really yield the types of prices that are in your comfort zone. So the He's an Angel, who you mentioned, who won on Friday, who's 15-1 with Bejarano. That was a horse that made some sense and, you know, wasn't an enormous price, but was going synthetic to dirt. That's been one of the difficult elements of handicapping some of the lower level races, is how to handle the synthetic to dirt moves, because you got a lot of these horses that are coming from Turfway and they're, you know, deciphering their form, looking back into some of the back dirt races that they have, has been kind of a key. So that's added another layer to all of it. No, the other thing is that there has been a decent amount of turf racing, but it's been very formful. And, you know, I kind of wanted to retweet my seemingly annual bitter Twitter message that I have after every turf sprint stake and just say that, you know, Wesley Ward has seemingly destroyed all the value in these races. And that's a credit to Wesley, who's done an excellent job. But, I mean, it seems like every one of these big fields, especially in stakes races that are turf sprints, he ends up winning with a disgustingly overbet favorite.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I'm not whining, but how the hell was Twilight Gleaming 5-2 on Saturday? Didn't take a step forward at 3, and now she's off a layoff, and they bet her like she couldn't lose, and she was a winner from the first jump.
Yeah. And won by open lengths. I covered her as a B in the multis. I mean, that's the other thing that'll drive you crazy about the place. You know, you look at a race like that, and you think, let me sprinkle around here, because there were some interesting horses in that group, and you end up. I mean, it wasn't even. You know, sometimes when you do that, and you get beat on the wire, or you know, even if the B wins at a short price, you sort of say, okay, this wasn't even close. You just felt like an idiot for using, you know, six multiples.
Yeah, exactly. And it was one of those where, you know, no matter what, I thought you could throw a blanket over four or five horses in that race. You really were getting a similar, you know, similar versions of the same horse. And the problem is, it seems like when the board dictates a certain thing to you, with regards to Wesley, it happens. And so, you know, you brought up Nakatomi and Run Classic a little earlier in the Commonwealth. Nakatomi was a horse who didn't take a dime, in my opinion. I know he went off 3-1, but he was always supposed to be favored in that race. The board knows Wesley's horses very, very well. And generally when they're bet, they run, and when they're not, they underperform. So something just to keep in mind a little bit too, because even though we talk a lot about, you know, who might be out there from a computer perspective, there still is a lot of sharp money in these pools that comes up at various times otherwise. So we had a claimer on Saturday afternoon that I think I made 8-5 and the horse went off 7-5, but, you know, pretty consistently took money. And that's generally what you're going to see from his horses that perform well.
Nick Tamaro with us. We'll wrap up, Nick, tomorrow at Keeneland. We start with 2-year-olds, and, well, there is a Catalina Cruiser. You know, yesterday I had Steve Aspison, and we brought up Sapphire Knights. I thought he'd be a little bit more animated, potentially, about Mattoli's first starter. He seemed a little ambivalent to some degree, but Sapphire Knights will be, and happens to be a. So there's the next round of 2-year-olds to start the week. There's lots of good allowances. Actually, that maiden fourth looks intriguing with turf. You got returnees and seasonal debuts and things, and there's some fun things happening. It's a good card tomorrow.
It is. Yeah, there's a pick six carryover as well. I mean, look, I bet a big part of it, Steve, is that Asmussen is looking forward to Churchill. Keeneland's just been, I mean, look, Keeneland's tough on everybody, right? It's tough on horse players. It's tough on horsemen. Asmussen is a guy that wins pretty consistently everywhere, and he never wins at Keeneland. I mean, I'm not exaggerating. His numbers at Keeneland are just brutal, and I guess that it comes up at a bad time of year for him, spring and fall, because
point.
He obviously puts a lot into Oaklawn and somewhat Fairgrounds to a lesser extent. And in the summer, his main focus is Saratoga. So, you know, what's left of his barn in terms of the marquee horses is a little bit thinned out by the time Keeneland comes around. But, I mean, yeah, he's I want to say 0 for 18 at the meet and has had horses that have run. He basically has had one horse run particularly well. And there's a horse that I would want to bring up from last week without droning on too terribly much, but that maiden race on Saturday that was won by Scylla, who is a full sister of Tacitus.
Yeah,
close matches. I went to TaylorMade Sunday in hopes of meeting up with Tacitus, but they had his stall door closed, so he was not willing to take on guests. And based on the way he treated me on the racetrack, I'm not terribly surprised. But the full sister of Tacitus really looked excellent.
Yeah.
And so the horse that I was referencing, of course, was Asmussen Zeitlos, who finished second for Stone Street, who ran very well. And I think it's just that, you know, I hope that Scylla is going to continue on. Not only because the three-year-old filly division needs a little bit more depth, but she looks very, very good. And I mean, Javier barely has moved his hands on her down the stretch. So, yeah, he had Zeitlos run well. Then he had a three-year-old come back on Sunday and take a ton of money in a race that was won by Brad Cox, shockingly. And that horse didn't run at all. So, yeah, just, you know, it's going to be – there's going to be like a 6-for-10 barrage early on at Churchill. And we're all going to say, yeah, you know what, Asmussen knows exactly what he's doing in the spring. And all of these Oaklawn horses that had been used up by April were given a freshening, and now they're ready to roll in May.
All right, we'll give you a freshening till the end of the week.
Sounds fair, my friend. I'll join you then.
Nick Tamro, everybody. MTAM1215. And some excellent provocative conversation. Speaking of provocative conversation, Racing Rachel is next to kick off the season at Horseshoe Indianapolis, and for all we know, Eric Hallstrom is already working on the exhortation by Nick to provide us with projected final odds, and with a cheery good morning, Rachel. How are you? You good?
Oh, you cut out a little bit. I said hello, we're on, and then you cut out.
Ah, all right. Am I still?
You got me?
Yeah, I got you. I got you.
I can hear you now.
All right, good. Haven't seen you since Vegas, and this is the perfect opportunity to bring you in and kick off the season in Shelbyville.
Yeah, I'm so excited for today. Honestly, it's been crazy weather. It was beautiful. It was 80 last week. Then it was cold and rainy yesterday. Now it's beautiful today. Fast track. You know, true to Indiana weather, it's you never can tell what's going to happen. But today we got a nice day for it, and 10 races, and pretty excited.
You know, we had Eric last week in advance of opening, and he, you know, he delivered an absolute haymaker in favor of horse players, eliminating the jackpot concept and adding a second pick five. That'll be the first five races of the day, the 11.99% takeout number. Then, of course, there's the late fire pick five. Talk a little bit about the season and what everybody should look forward to from your perspective.
Oh, gosh. You know, from my perspective, I think what was, personally, I was a little bummed about adding Saturdays back. What a treat it was not to work on the weekends for once in my 12-year career. But for the horsemen, though, that they've been wanting to do this for so long, and it's so good to cultivate new players and new people and have those events on Saturday where people can really come out like as a retail aspect. So I'm really excited about that. And then, of course, I am excited about the two pick fives. I told him when he first came that that's what we should do, that we should get rid of the pick six and have two pick fives. So he's finally come to his senses, and it definitely was a very popular decision. So I think adding those Saturdays, adding some really cool wagers, and I'm really excited for Indiana Derby as well. So yeah, just lots of fun coming up here for 2023.
I see that you've been featuring during the lead up to the season, kind of highlighting some of the things to look forward to, including very interestingly a jockey colony that that might be a little not new per se, but there's some faces and some 7-pound and 5-pound apprentices that are dotting the lineup, and give us a feel for what you noticed about these first couple of days of entries.
Yeah, you know, there's some jockeys that I'm not very familiar with, but I did get a chance to, being in Indiana for so long, Jimmy Mack and I are friends. You know, I've watched his daughters grow up. He's the jocks agent for Sean, Hannah, and I forget who else's book he has, but Hannah Leahy is who I interviewed the other day, and she is just really, really well-spoken and knowledgeable about horses. She's been a little bit of everywhere, and she started in eventing, and she kind of got bit by the speed bug, she said, and she'll never go back. So she's been riding for a while, but just got into, you know, racing, so excited to see what she does. And then we've got really nice trainers in addition to of course our Larry Ravelli was here last year, but he's got more. And then Louis Roussel, I'm excited about him being there. His assistant Danny Simpson actually used to work at Hoosier Park, so when I was an intern I knew Danny, and now so Danny's up here with Louis horses, so super excited to see Danny, his wife Megan, and see them running some horses here in Indiana for sure. So going to be an exciting meet, new faces, and my man Deshaun's back. I'm excited about that, of course. He was thinking about going to Churchill, but he, at the last minute, decided to come back to Indiana. So, yeah, just looking forward to a really, really good meet.
Do we want to pick a couple of spots for opening day here? Nice full fields too, especially the second half of the card from the late pick five, 11 by 12 by 12 by 12 by 10.
I was saying yesterday to Fonzinali, I was telling him, man, the first half is chalky, but dang, does it make up for it in the last part of the card. Like you just said, the late fire pick five is really, really nice. I have a long shot in the fifth race in that maiden. I'm gonna probably put Zero Click on my ticket. The 8 Bodyful, I think, is kind of the obvious choice for everybody, but question mark for the dirt. So I'm gonna go with Zero Click. Ramos is aboard for John Langmeyer. There is a question mark as well here, but this one's adding blinkers, and the way she ran last time, I think she's gonna really like them, so that's a little bit of a long shot. I'm gonna go 8-5-4 in this fifth race.
That's a homebred, John Langemeyer, and what's interesting about this is he's a guy that clearly, you know, you look at blinker stats, and a lot of times you'll see somebody and the numbers are murky, you know, 0-for-8, 1-for-11. Langemeyer seems to do it with real intent. He really, you know, he's basically been waiting for the meet to start, and it wouldn't be surprising if this one, you know, comes out running. And of course, you're also getting a first time dirt for Zero Click.
Yeah, it's a question mark for sure, but he's a really good horseman. And that's another thing, you know, I was saying yesterday, is it kind of is a challenge with you don't know which horses are going to be fit, which ones are going to be ready to go, or which ones need ones, especially in some of the later races like the, Indiana bred races. So
yeah,
it'll definitely be a challenge here, but I think it's a nice spot. This is an interesting group, and she's got a little bit of a shot here.
There's actually one aspect that instantly becomes apparent when you talk on that level are the horses that basically wintered in Kentucky. And this is peppered with the horses coming from Turfway.
I know, exactly. And another thing is our horsemen that have had horses that are coming or that have ran at Indiana Maybe not in this race. There's, yeah, like you said, there's a lot of turf weight horses. Hannah's on a horse, the 9, that might be interesting from Ray Kesbarn. But these horses that have been running there are the ones that you do kind of see a little bit of a form. It's good to see some of those horses that did go to turf weight and run a little bit. And then later when you get to like the next Indiana bred race, it's like they haven't ran since November. So it's a little bit more of a head scratcher. So you kind of got to play where they've been running and if they've been running.
Well, and just, you know, glancing, you know, through some of the fields, you know, it is opening day downstate in Illinois as well. And you do have the presence earlier on the card. Brittany Vandenberg and husband Chris Amy. And I'm intrigued, you know, the, and of course, you know, Fairmount had been their base, and it feels like, you know, they keep branching out. And I'm curious how many they might have on the grounds.
Yeah, I know. I would be interested to go back there and figure that out, too. I don't have a barn list from them. What race are they in? Is it the 7th or the 8th today?
I've got them in the – I've got the first place is in the 4th that jumped out at me. Awesome Sunday coming in from Hawthorne, actually. Second off the layoff.
Yep. This is an open race, and I really like that horse, but I think – I like Hot Little Thing, Ashard and Brissette a little bit more, but I do have them circled, the two in here, and I think I'm going to put it in my picks. They do so well with their horses that they ship, you know, like some people, their horses don't ship that well, but their horses just do really well, and you see them all over the place, and Chrissy Mee, such a good guy, he raced it. Hoosier back of the day as well, so definitely rooting for them. I like that pick a lot, Awesome Sunday.
I'm just out of curiosity. This I wanted to see how many they might have run. You know, I think of them as sort of a tandem, right? Here we go.
I don't even know who else would she ride. Every time they have a horse in, Chris follows the horse.
Well, she ran seven horses. Last year? Yep.
Okay.
She was 1 for 7, so limited. There were, you know, limited starters, but here they are on opening day. So I would keep a close tab. And on that topic, actually, let's give a quick, we could actually give a quick glance from last year, and just to kind of remind
everybody. They were in
everybody.
Some tough races, though, if I do recall.
Maybe some stakes.
Pretty tough spots.
Well, and of course, Gennaro Garcia and Randy Klopp, they're going to they're going to dominate the standings. Tony Granitz, as well. And Brad Cox, who is always dangerous. Amos, who is going to get his wins. He's always going to get, he's not as active, I think, in Indiana as he used to be. Tiana Richardville.
Yeah, she had one of her best years last year ever. And ever since we opened the track for training in the winter, that was her thing. We called her, what did Bill and I used to call her? It was like the end of the meet. Like once it was September, you bet all Tiana's horses because they were finally fit. And now that she has been able to train in the winter, it's just she's like really been on fire. So, yeah, she ended up in the top 5 last year, didn't
she?
Yes,
she did. Yeah, she did. She won 34 races from 179 starters.
And she's a good friend of mine, and I got to tell you, she's also one of those trainers that, like, just really, really loves her horses. She's been around horses her whole life. Her grandpa used to train, and her brothers worked the gate, and, just a good Indiana horse racing family. And
love it.
She treats her horses like pets, gives them belly rubs in the morning they're watching training. So she's one of those. You love to see it. You know, you see so many different kind of trainers at the track. She's
no doubt. What, when is the turf going to kick in?
Okay. I don't even know if I'm allowed to say this, but it's been a long day. My kids The youngest one's been
Wait a
growing
minute.
Up.
It's
so
10
Eric yells at me.
It's 10 o'clock. It's,
hey,
it's,
I got a 15-month-old spewing puke over here, Steve, and I made time for you, so you better feel loved, and you better take my inside information that I'm going to offer you.
Go ahead.
I was in the racing meeting the other day, and they said that if everything goes well, the weather kind of holds to how it's been or projected to be. I think they said mid-May.
Okay. All right.
So soon. I know it might be the end of May, maybe, but I know they didn't say any later than that if everything goes well. But we do get plagued with a lot of rain, so
yeah.
Let's hope that we don't. I mean, it's just how it is in Indiana. That's why we grow so many crops. It just seems like it rains all the time. But it really, really grew really well this year.
Nice.
And we have the new sod specialist, Mike Depew, and he is really, I talked to him, he's so knowledgeable. He, like, his knowledge of how grass grows is intense. So really excited to have him here, and the grass looks gorgeous. So very excited to do that here probably at the end of May.
All right. Well, that will do is enhance the cards, and based on the first couple of days, off to a good start, and we'll get rolling today. 2:30 first post, and who's give everybody the lineup on the faces. I mean, you and John and Brian Aragone.
Yeah.
Who else?
Well, it's me, John, and Brian Aragone. He's going to play. There's a contest today. You can play for free. You just email horseshoeindycontest@gmail.com. BA's hat trick for the Minnesota hockey loving boy. And it's a special contest that we're doing. I'm doing Twitter Tuesday. Martha Clausen will be handicapping the quarters later in the card. And we're just going to be doing a whole lot of, you know, rotating between all of us, doing a little bit of coverage here and a little bit of coverage there. Super excited that BA's back. And, of course, my man John Dooley, my B-dubs partner. I'm ready to hang back out with him. He's such a great guy. I just work so well with him. Wonderful race caller and wonderful person.
Well, we've said in a lot of ways, Indy is the new Arlington, and It really feels that way when you hear the distinctive call of John Dooley presiding over everything. Well, Rachel, best of luck to you, the team. We'll talk regularly. We'll cap and we'll get the season rolling. I appreciate it, and we'll be watching the feed later this afternoon.
Thanks so much, Steve. I'll talk to you guys later.
You got it. Rachel McLaughlin, everybody, and Racing Rachel, a lot of fun. She's the puking baby. she's unbelievable. We've got to get the break in, and when we come back, we'll go to, before John White joins us, we'll get a visit in with Arno Delacour. All right? So hour two coming up, Arno Delacour, John White, Jim Watkins, because it not only is it opening day in Shelbyville, but in Southern Illinois, in the shadows of St. Louis, just outside East St. Louis, Collinsville, right? Yeah. I'll give you, did I? I'll tell you what, who's going to Collinsville today? I'm going to give you a place in St. Louis. If you missed Tina and I, coming through St. Louis, I'll see if Jim knows this. You know, I'm like a divining rod when it comes to particularly good Italian, and found a place that was just spectacular. You remember? Now I'm going through my phone to find it. I have not finished the report. Did I finish the report? I got to put up some more pictures from the tail end of last week, because we finished with a flourish, I'll tell you. In fact, I made the joke to Tina you know, yesterday when she got home from school, you know, we had to go outside and, you know, get organized. And she, you know, while I'm away, she'll do the spring stuff. But, you know, you're figuring out what's broken, what needs to be replaced, you know, the hose and the hose coupler, all, you know, the thing that winds the hose up. And we've got the grill going. And one thing that seems to be broken, the bathroom scale. I said to Tina this morning, I said, something's wrong with this. She laughed, actually. She laughed loud and long. Yeah, there was a number on there. I mean, I was approaching a number that, I'll be honest, it scared me. Yeah, I think we're going to be laying low in Louisville. we have to, the week in New Orleans. Yes, the week in New Orleans got us a little bit. The place in, I got to find this place. It's not on the hill. It's not in the famous Italian neighborhood. Where there obviously is fabulous. There it is. I want to say Brentwood. Yes, Brentwood. Look at me. I tell you, like a homing pigeon in World War I. Frank Pappas Ristorante. His two sons now run it. Frank Pappas on Brentwood Boulevard. In Brentwood, Missouri, St. Louis. Out of this world. Bam! There you go. Back after this, Arno Delacour.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best-kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com. Nominate now for Penn National's biggest day of the season, the $400,000 Grade 2 Penn Mile and the $150,000 Penn Oaks will both run Friday, June 2nd, on a card that also includes four Pennsylvania bread stakes, each with a $100,000 purse. Call the racing office at Hollywood Casino at Penn National Racecourse, 800-233-8238. That's 800-233-8238.
Would you believe that champions weren't measured by rings, but by a crown? That the history books were written on dirt? That the greatest of all time was a horse?
He is running like a tremendous machine.
Experience.